Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Ruthie's Table 4 in partnership with Montclair. Fisher Stevens and I were recently brought close together by one of the greatest artists of the 20th century, Philip Guston, and one of the greatest footballers, David Beckham. A few weeks ago, he was in the River Cafe with the producers of Beckham, the series he directed for Netflix. We agreed to have breakfast at my house. A half hour turned into more than an hour as we talked about Guston, architecture we lived in, and food we cooked. We agreed we would continue the conversation on Ruthie's Table 4 when I came to New York. So here we are, this time in Fisher's house, connected through a love of Beckham, food, film, and Guston, and each other. Life is good. So here we are. Do you know that we asked you to choose a recipe?
Yes.
Which is for pumpkin soup. I have to say that this soup is amazing because it's so thick. You can eat it with a fork. It's just, and it really is, you'll see, it's just pumpkin. And you can have it with chicken stock or vegetable stock.
So the pumpkin soup, this one serves six. And we start with 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, River Cafe olive oil I prefer, plus extra for the crostini and for serving 50 grams of unsalted butter. Make it organic butter if you can. Okay. Then we use 2 cloves of garlic, peeled and finely chopped. Wash your hands afterwards. A small bunch of fresh marjoram leaves. Mm-hmm. And then, because it's a British restaurant, we'll say kilograms and grams, but 1.5 kilograms. Yeah, no, it's good. But what is 1.5 kilograms roughly?
It's about 2.5 pounds. Well, 2.5 pounds is a kilo, so what would be about 3 pounds.
Three pounds. So 1.5 kilograms, roughly 3 pounds of pumpkin, peeled, seeded, and diced. 200 grams of new potatoes, peeled and cubed. We should keep them white potatoes, right? New potatoes are white.
Oh, yeah.
New. 200 grams of new potatoes, peeled and cubed. 2 dried red chilies, crumbled. I love making a little spice. Yeah. Love chilies. 1 liter of chicken stock.
Or vegetable stock.
6 slices of ciabatta bread. Yep. 1 garlic clove peeled in half. So not the finely chopped, but
because we're going to rub it over the bread. Yeah.
The bread with freshly grated Parmesan. Oh, I'm so hungry.
Are you hungry? Should we go get some?
Yeah, this sounds so good. So you're going to heat the extra virgin olive oil and butter in a saucepan and gently fry the chopped garlic with the marjoram leaves until soft. Add the pumpkin and potatoes and continue to cook for a minute. Add the chilies and the season well with sea salt and black pepper, not too much salt. Pour in enough stock just to cover the pumpkin. Bring to the boil and then turn down the heat and simmer for 20 to 25 minutes or until the pumpkin is tender, adding more stock if necessary to keep the pumpkin covered. Mm. So you'll have to keep checking on it.
Because you don't want it watery, so you want just enough to cook the pumpkin.
Yeah, okay, that's important. Strain about a third of the stock from the pumpkin and set it aside. Pour the contents of the pan into a food processor and pulse.
Yeah, you know what that is, like a magic mix.
Right, and pulse it, though.
Yeah, because you want it thick, really thick. You don't want a thin puree.
No. It's like a great meal. Return to the saucepan and add the strained off stock plus any remaining stock. Check for seasoning. So if you need a little more salt, a little more pepper, you check it out there. The soup will be very thick. Then reheat gently for serving. By the way, for the crostini, toast the slices of ciabatta, then rub with the garlic halves and drizzle over extra virgin River Cafe olive oil.
Ah, beautiful.
Serve the soup with Parmesan, extra virgin olive oil, and the crostini. And the addition of 200 grams of cannellini beans is a variation of the soup, which I personally recommend. If you make this, omit the ciabatta crostini. I prefer the cannellini beans to the crostini, but Yeah. And that's up to you.
I love cannellini beans.
Yeah? I love them too.
And when you read that recipe, it is just pure. It's potatoes, pumpkins, and some, you know.
Healthy.
Healthy. It's yeah. good. It's
and you'll
good
be full.
And you'll be
you
full.
You don't need much more.
And it's not expensive.
Right.
If you're thinking that
especially
way.
After Halloween.
Except for the olive oil.
That's oh, yeah. The River little, Cafe little olive oil.
This year, it's insane.
Why? Because of the olives?
Because it was so hot this summer. I mean, there's hardly going to be any production of olive oil roche.
Where do you and get your olive oil?
So we have five estates in Tuscany that we buy our wine from, and we buy it from more. But they a lot of the wine producers make olive oil as well. And so every year we go... We take 20 people from, if you've worked in the River Cafe for like a year, we take you to Tuscany. We take about, actually, then we take another 20 to Piemonte. And then we go and teach them how they make the olive oil.
Are your wine producers, you like the Italian, the Tuscan wines?
Yeah, we do. Well, yeah. Now, we used to, you know, our whole roots in the River Cafe were Tuscany when we started because Richard's family, my husband's family, came from Florence. And Rose, my partner, lived in Lucca. But then, you know, it was wine that really took us to other regions. So we went to Piemonte, we went to the Veneto, we went to Puglia, all of whom make wine. And so it's not just, I love a Tuscan. You know, I love the, do you drink wine?
Yes,
you,
quite a bit. Maybe too much.
Sicily's become a big, I've noticed in your wine.
Etna, yeah.
I'm very into Etna. I'm very into Sicilian wines. I've been there. I've toured a few vineyards in Sicily. I love the natural wines of Sicily, particularly.
Yeah.
Once I started making money, I would just go big with food, wine. I've blown a great portion of my money on.
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting that people sort of measure their success in what they were able to eat. So Beckham, you know, I remember we did a podcast with him, and he was saying that he remembers being able to go to a restaurant and not look at the right side of the, you know, the page, you know, or that McCartney said that he thought wine was terrible because he'd only had cheap wine. Mm. He'd never had a good bottle of wine until Brian Epstein took him to out to eat. Was that the case?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I remember one of the first proper meals I ever had was my girlfriend took me to 21 for my 21st birthday. And that was fancy. That was the beginning of like, wow, people eat, you know. And then my first bottle of proper wine, because I hated wine too. I thought it was, I was doing a play at Williamstown, Arthur Miller's play. I was playing Arthur Miller. It was called American Clock.
Oh, it was about Arthur Miller.
Yeah.
By Arthur Miller.
Arthur Miller was there. Mm-hmm. He was rewriting the play while we were, I mean, it was incredible. And he said to me, like, you'll get it. When the clothes was kid, you know, it just didn't give me much confidence. But the guy who played my father is a guy named Ron Rifkin, who's one of my great friends. And he took me out and he said, have you ever had red wine? I said, yeah, I don't like it. He goes, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Have you ever tasted it? Do you know what Bordeaux is? Do you know what Burgundy is? Do you know? I'm like, no. Barolo? No. He goes, okay.
Nice man. Nice.
And he, and to this day, he's 84. He comes over, we drink incredible wine together still. So that was when I was like 22, and then he got me hooked, and then I just, I'm obsessed now with red, mostly reds, French, Italian, the good stuff, but anyway.
Do you, going back, so you started acting, did you go to college or acting school, or did you, were you ever on your own in a place where you had to... Not eat out, but cook for yourself. The first question is, what was your college? Did you go to high school?
Yeah, I dropped out of high school. I started auditioning at like 15 for shows and plays. I got off Broadway, my first stuff, when I could still use my name before I had to join a union. And then I started working as a busboy in two restaurants in New York. And as a bike messenger and making money, like good money, like more money than my mom. And then I got my first job at 16, had to change my name. It was a movie over the summer. Didn't pay that much, but I thought, I'm going to make it. But no, of course, I didn't work again for like a year and a half, 2 years. But I was eating out. Yeah. And I, while in high school, I worked two nights a week. Do you remember a restaurant? Mario Batali ended up opening a place called Esca in the same spot, but it was called Curtain Up, 43rd and 9th. It was, all right, I was a busboy there, and I was a busboy at a very groovy kind of hipster Upper East Side singles place called Yellow Fingers on 60th and 3rd Avenue.
Did that teach you, do you think, about food and wine? Did they?
No, because those places were not your, those were hamburger, those weren't, you know, like great places, no.
Did it teach you how it to be me, in a restaurant? I always think that people, one of the reasons I love Americans coming to the River Cafe is that most Americans have at one time in their life worked in a restaurant. And I think that teaches you a little bit.
It gave me such respect for waiters and busboys. Some of the things that I saw in those kitchens, you would never, ever have that at River Cafe.
Yeah. You mean anger and bullying?
Anger, bullying, but also not even that, just the way they handled the food.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But so I think, and also that culture of eating out, you know, and then I go to school. And then, you know what I said, my senior year in high school, I did like 2 months and I was like, forget it. I'm just going to work. My mom's like, okay, you might as well. You're making more money than me. And I was auditioning and studying acting very seriously.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't really get a job. And then there was a kid that I knew through auditioning and in high school, he went to another high school, two kids, actually one of them is named Matthew Broderick.
Oh, yeah.
And Matthew Broderick, I bumped into him and he's like, hey, man, I'm in this play. It's maybe moving to Broadway and I just got a bigger play and I'm leaving. I'll get you an audition to replace me. And he got me the audition to replace him. And
what was the play?
The play was called Torch Song Trilogy.
Oh, yeah, Torch Song Trilogy.
And I got the job.
Was that in the 80s?
1982.
Yeah.
It was in a little theater in Sheridan Square. Mm. It was kind of a revolutionary gay play by Harvey Fierstein. Yeah. And Matthew got me the audition and I got the job and that was it. I started working I've been working. And then Matthew was in a play called Brighton Beach Memoirs and he was going to leave that. And then he got me an audition to replace him in that, and then I replaced him in that.
He believed in you.
He did.
Yeah, he was in the restaurant the other. Well, you know, they're coming to London
to do Plaza Suite.
They're going to do Plaza Suite with, and they were there. I wasn't there that night, but they like to eat.
Oh yeah. I've had some great meals with Matthew.
Have you?
Where? Oh yeah. As a matter of fact, okay. So this is a food story. So when I was replacing Matthew in Brighton Beach Memoirs, Matthew was making money. He was going to do Ferris Bueller, right? He was going to go do the movie or something, I believe. And he would take me out to dinner at this amazing place. I don't think it's still there. Maybe it is. 52nd Street, called Gallagher's Steakhouse.
I've heard of Gallagher's.
Gallagher's Steakhouse was the place. The sports guys, everybody went in. And he bought me dinner a few times there. Big dinner, serious. Because he was making bank, man, you know. And we used to go. And we would drink martinis. I think I was 18. It was illegal then. But who cares
so
now?
Food
was so key. And then when you're on Broadway, right, you're acting at night, you're done with the show, you go to restaurants.
So that's what I asked, you know, your friend Rafe, you know, or other actors, do you eat before the play?
No.
Do you eat after the play? We had a couple who ate during the play, yeah.
Really?
There's a few, but I always meet them, you know, if you have a friend in a theater, you meet afterwards and then you go out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to be too
social thing.
But you don't want to be
no.
You don't want to go on stage with a full stomach.
Cool. Have you ever had to eat on stage? Have
you
eaten something?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that all fake? Or what
yeah, a little bit. You know, like Brighton Beach every night we had to pretend to have dinner and, you know, applesauce, but you just take a couple of bit. No. And the worst is in movies because you have to recreate, you know, the thing about Succession,
yeah, we can talk about it.
Yeah, the thing about Succession is that there was a lot of scenes where you're supposed to be eating, but nobody's ever eating because you can't recreate the position and how much is there because of the way we shoot the show.
I see. You'd have to have the same thing in the same take in the same thing.
And because of the way we shot in big, giant chunks, it was impossible. And people notice there's like a whole website about why does nobody eat on Succession? Like literally people notice that, but
because a lot of the drama takes place in tables or in, you know, in cocktail parties or the food.
But I like that element because there's always a sense of the tension about being sitting down to eat but not eating because there's so much drama happening. I think that's also quite, you know, lots of people talk about actually sitting down to a table is a very kind of positive experience, but can also be a very challenging experience, and that's what Succession captured so well.
Really challenging.
Real times,
I mean, I never, because my character never sits still, so and I'm never invited to the table to eat. I'm always just told what to do. But sadly, but that was good for my. I didn't have to worry about the food on the plate. But
did they feed you all the actors? Because that's another thing, isn't it? What you feed.
Yeah,
I talked to Wes. You know, Wes's dream would be not to stop for lunch. You know, he told me.
What do you mean? That's you don't stop for lunch. Wes and Succession, and now, you know, I'm working on Guy Ritchie movie. Mm. All these productions, we do French hours. So there's no real break for lunch. You work through lunch. French hours, you only work 10-hour days, right? Mm. Like in the old, you know, in many days, my early days of making movies, you'd shoot 14-hour days. Mm. But that would include like an hour where you all sit and eat. Succession post-COVID found it much more manageable and you get much more done if you don't break. Mm. But they'll hand you like a box and in the box is just
crap.
Mm. Wes is different because like on Asteroid City, if we were working, you know, all the good news about being on a Wes movie is that you're usually a smaller part, so you only work like 4-hour days. Mm-hmm. So then you can go and have a big lunch. But if you're working a 10-hour day with Wes or an 8-hour day with Wes, they have like on Asteroid City, we were in Spain. And it would be a carton, but the food was much, not to knock Succession's catering, but much better on Wes's movies than...
Do you think that's a European versus
I think it's European. I think Jeremy Dawson and Wes, they like food. Jeremy's the producer. But they are, it is better. It's just, it's fun. I love hanging out with, but the social experience after work, sitting at a table with everybody talking and eating, and it's really nice.
It's nice.
It's like a family.
Yeah.
Well, especially the last one, we were quarantined together. We weren't even allowed to go into Madrid, which is, you know, we had to stay in Chinchón.
Yeah.
And there's not much to do in Chinchón. So, but the food is good. And and I've had great meals with Wes.
But what about when you're directing? It's your decision, isn't it, to say what I'm going to do about food?
Yeah. So my feature that I last did in New Orleans, which was right before COVID, we actually tried an experiment with a healthy catering company, but it didn't work out. No, I loved it, but the crew, you know, we were shooting in Louisiana, and they like their meat, their pig.
Is it very male, the crew? I mean, it sounds like we're talking about men who want.
It's a lot of men, but it's not only men, but even the women, they wanted. Wanted substance.
Fair enough.
But so that didn't go great. But I also. On my last thing I directed for App, this pilot, Dear Edward, I did the Wes French hours, and the food wasn't great either. But we, you know, the days are shorter, and the crew gets to go home earlier, but we don't break fully for lunch. But you get your box of lunch, and then you break for 20 minutes, and then we go. But it makes the day a lot faster.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Yeah, I was just interested, how not that many successful actors end up being successful directors. What motivated that or enable that?
I to be honest, I would do these movies as an actor and then I would see them and I would be like, God, this is not very good. Not all of them, but I can do this. I want to do this because the script was great. Or I mean, there were other directors that I worked with where I would be like, oh my God, they're so good. I want to learn. So it was a combination. I kind of liked watching certain directors direct. Yeah, I don't know. And I, to be honest, like waiting for the job as an actor and just being an actor, it becomes all about you and how you look and you, as opposed to being a character in a painting. I wanted to paint the painting. And but I love acting and I like bouncing back and forth as much as I possibly can.
Did you know the River Cafe has a shop It's full of our favorite foods and designs. We have cookbooks, linen napkins, kitchenware, tote bags with our signatures, glasses from Venice, chocolates from Turin. You can find us right next door to the River Cafe in London or online at shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Fisher, here we are in your beautiful house with your beautiful photographs.
Thank you. Brooklyn, Fort Greene, Brooklyn.
Yeah, so tell me about Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Where are we?
Well, it's an interesting neighborhood. I played on my high school softball team in the late 70s. And we played like four blocks away at a park called Fort Greene Park. And on two occasions, after once winning and once losing, I was mugged after the game by local neighborhood kids. When we saw this house many, many, many moons later that was for sale, we were about to have our first child, Lexi Bloom and I. I first was a bit hesitant, but the neighborhood had changed quite a bit. And as we were looking at the house, I opened the door on the back porch, and I'm looking at it, and there's a woman on the porch next door, and she goes, "Fisher, is that you?" And I'm like, "Rosie?" And she goes, Are you going to buy the house?" And that's a terrible impersonation of Rosie Perez. But Rosie Perez is my next door neighbor. And she's like, "The neighborhood's changed. You'll love it. I've been here forever." Yeah. That's the worst Rosie Perez. My accent's bad. But anyway, so here we are. And we love the neighborhood.
Before, and did you live in Manhattan before?
I actually had moved to Brooklyn in 2005 after 30 plus years in Manhattan. But I will say my neighborhood, and it's too bad, you know, we can't go to dinner tonight because there are like seven great restaurants now on DeKalb Avenue, which is near my, you know, around the corner. And it has become Restaurant Row.
Tell me about them.
Fort Greene.
What are they?
Well, the kind of landmark place, the first one, the oldest one is called Romans. Yeah. And they change the menu every night. It's great. And now there's Evelina's, there's Miss Ada's, there's Sailor's that just opened, the woman who was the chef for the pig.
She worked with me.
Well,
April worked
April.
With me for years.
So April.
Yeah, and I just got a message from her saying, "Hey, Ruthie, I'm opening a restaurant in Brooklyn."
Okay, so it's around the corner.
Yeah, we have to go.
So it's April. Become, right, and it's become really Spotted Pig. Mm. That's the place. So anyway, it's becoming this this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So is it an Italian neighborhood here, or is it?
No, it's just a hipster. I think it's more of a hipster thing. But no, this neighborhood is very, it's everything. It's a combination of everything.
I don't know if I'm cool enough to live here.
Yes, you are.
Ooh, wait, you're, have to get way
no, cooler. No, it's not cool anymore. We've probably screwed the neighborhood.
What's cool? Like another part of Brooklyn? Because New York.
Well, Williamsburg is and Bushwick. I guess Bushwick is where all the hipsters are now.
Yeah.
You know, it just keeps moving. But I like to spend many days, like today, I won't go into Manhattan. Many days, I don't go into Manhattan, you know.
When did you go? Do you drive?
I bicycle a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Electric bike.
Do you bike over the Brooklyn Bridge?
Yeah,
that must be beautiful.
A lot. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. I had a Vespa for years.
Oh, yeah.
Now I use an electric.
Be careful, though.
I know, that's why I got rid of it.
But also even biking. So you grew up near here.
My mother was, we moved here with her to make it as a painter. From Chicago.
So you're born in Chicago.
Yeah, born in Chicago.
And she was a painter in the, what year would that be? Was she in the
Well, 60s? She started in the 70s. She had a first loft in 71, 72. Do you know a painter named Marilyn Minter? She's made it pretty big. So Marilyn and my mother shared a space. We lived in a loft and my mom was dating an actor, a maitre d', but he was trying to be an actor. And
really she ended up an actor.
Yeah, she ended up like working as the coat check at his restaurant.
Another restaurant?
Yeah, it was called Charlie's. It was a very famous theater restaurant. Mm. 40, now it was called Sam's, or it's called Sam's, still there. And we had trouble paying the payments, so the acting school that he studied in rented the loft and built a stage in our living room in the meatpacking. So I'd come home and there'd be acting class in my house, which is how I got into show business because I had a stage in our living room and
So she was painting or working. And
she
you
was
were
painting.
In school. What did you eat? Do you remember as a kid?
Yeah,
like
well,
when
so
you were
I have
little,
crazy stories.
When you were in Chicago, do you remember the food you ate in Chicago?
The food wasn't much. It wasn't much exciting. I remember when we moved to New York, what was so exciting was the food because my mom's boyfriend took us to Chinatown, and then he'd show up with a bushel of blue crabs, and we'd boil the crabs and eating all these exotic foods, Vietnamese pho. I remember discovering that at 13 years old, and I remember, you know, spicy chicken wings and just all kinds
of
ethnic.
Eating out, or did he cook
eating
it
out?
At home?
No, no cooking. Very little cooking at home in my house, and a lot of because the other thing about New York, even though we lived in the meatpacking, there weren't many restaurants there. There were opportunities to grab food, pizza, right?
Yeah.
The pizza slices and all that. And then my mother working at night. When I was 15 and 16, we moved to.
You're an only child.
My sisters ended up moving back to Chicago with my dad
because
the life was too crazy.
And you stayed.
I stayed with my mom in New York and her boyfriend. And then...
So you ate out.
Yeah, I ate out a lot. My whole high school
did
years...
Did you get to choose the restaurant?
No, it was about a financial decision too sometimes. Like, you know, what was cheap, right?
Yeah.
A lot of Chinese. I got to be so friendly with a Chinese restaurant on 6th Avenue and 16th Street that Jin's Kitchen that I actually ate with the family two nights a week with the Lazy Susan... Yeah. And
it different when you ate with them than when you ate by yourself?
Yeah, it was much different. The food, the food was the quantity of food and the selection of food was. I couldn't handle some of what they were eating. There were things that I couldn't recognize, but then there was some great stuff. Yeah.
Well, did you go back to visit your father in Chicago, and was that food different? That food experience different to be?
Yeah. Then I became a snob. To be honest, I became a snob because I had experienced these incredible delicacies and by the way, you can eat brilliantly, especially in New York in the 70s and 80s, for nothing. Yeah. Is that my daughter?
It is.
Hello.
Who's that?
Hi. Come on in. What are you having?
Come in. Tell me. What are you having for dinner tonight?
Pasta, meatballs, and some zucchini.
Very good.
All right, good. Did you finish? Have you eaten it already, or have you just...
I've eaten it.
What do I cook? What's my specialty? Yeah.
Pasta.
Sundays. What is the only thing I really make well?
Pancakes.
So how good are my pancakes?
Very, very good.
What's good about them? Are they thick pancakes?
I have to say I am the worst cook except for pancakes and pasta dishes. Mm. Right, Lola?
Two good things to eat. Yeah. Do you know why your mom named you Fisher?
Yeah, because that wasn't my real name.
Oh, okay.
My real name?
Okay.
What was my real name?
Stephen.
Stephen Fisher. Yes. When you join the Actors Union.
There was already someone named Stephen Fisher.
Do you know that happened to Michael Caine?
No.
He said that he was called Michael something else. And he called up his agent and he said, there's already somebody named Michael something else who's offered a part. And they said, we need a last name. We need a last name. He was sitting in Leicester Square, or standing in Leicester Square at a phone booth, and he looked up and the Caine Mutiny was playing in the cinema.
And that's how he spells it, Caine Mutiny.
And he became Michael Caine.
I love that.
You're thinking if, you know, Lawrence of Arabia might have been called Michael Arabia or something.
But wow.
Caine Mutiny.
Well, yeah. I was actually, there used to be a sign for years in Brooklyn. And it said Fisher-Stevens Paints, or it was a store. And that's when I got the idea. I'll just reverse it. But my dad always called me Fish. Everybody called me Fish.
Oh, yeah?
So I was always Fish. Yeah.
Not your sister, though.
No.
If you like listening to Ruthie's Table 4, would you please make sure to rate and review the podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just directed Beckham, which is just about the biggest thing ever to happen to Netflix. And Beckham's also a great fan of the River Cafe and the friend of Ruthie's. How did that come about?
So I was on my way to work on Succession one day, and the phone rang and it was Leonardo DiCaprio's office saying, listen, Leo and David had dinner last night, and he suggested you to direct his life story. Are you interested? And I wasn't, to be honest, that interested.
Did you know about David Beckham?
No,
yeah,
I knew.
I don't think very many Americans know about
I didn't know
Beckham.
About him.
You know, I think that's...
I mean, I knew who he was. He was famous. I knew he was beautiful. I knew he had a beautiful wife. I knew he was a brand. And what really scared me was he's a brand, and he's going to try to brand me, make me do a branded content film for him, which I wasn't interested in. But I took the meeting on Zoom. It was during COVID. And also, Succession is written by Jesse Armstrong and Tony Roach, two Brits, and Jesse and Tony. I told them about this opportunity. And they're like, you have to do it. David Beckham is a genius. He's a great footballer. And I'm like, really? He's that good? They're like, are you, what, you like football? You don't? I'm like, no, I didn't. I got into it a little when David left. And they immediately, like, they went on YouTube and showed me, like, clips of him. And they're like, you got to dig. You got to do your research, man. So that, it evolved. And it was actually over a dinner because I didn't want to say yes until I met him. So I was shooting Succession in Italy. So I said, okay, well, I'll come and meet you in London. And he's like, okay, meet us at Harry's Bar for dinner. And he says, and wear a jacket. And I'm like, I don't have a jacket. Mm. He's like, well, get a jacket. So I was in Florence. So I bought a shirt. It might even have been this shirt. I mean, the jacket. And I got to Harry's Bar. And I remember this. I haven't told this story, but I walked in to the restaurant. It was empty. It was like 6 o'clock. And they go, oh, yes, I'm here to see the Beckhams. He's like, oh, yes, only David's here so far, so come in. And I walk in, and there's this ass just like sticking out of a table. And I'm like, oh, I think it's David's. And he like almost, it was like a comic moment. He almost like bumps his head on the table. He goes, sorry, Victoria just dropped her earrings. I'm just looking for them.
Under the table. Coming that way. Yeah.
And then, and that's how I met him. And then we had this dinner at Harry's Bar, which is very fancy. And I was a bit, you know, nervous, dressed in this ill-fitted, you know, jacket, €40, €40 piece of, you know, whatever jacket from some store in Florence. Anyway, so we sit down and immediately, you know, he loves red wine. And he's like, do you like red wine? I'm like, yeah. Because you like Bordeaux? I'm like, I love Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. And he ordered a 2004 Latour or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a fun movie to work on. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, so we instantly got to know each other and had dinner. And that was what convinced me. I can't remember the food. Isn't that interesting?
Do you know how important food is to him? I mean, when we talk, when he comes to River Cafe, you know, and they come, very often they come as a family. But he said that his idea of a great night was to get rid of his family and his kids, and, you know, his kids and Victoria, not get rid of, but they're out, and he cooks for himself. And when he was in Milan, he took cooking classes, right?
Yeah.
Did you get into food with him?
Well, we
I've seen the series.
Yeah, so we film him cooking. We film him cooking chicken. But
what's your best Beckham food story? You had a great Beckham food story.
Well, the other day, he came to New York and he said, let's have lunch. And he said, meet me at Lucali's in Carroll Gardens, probably one of the best calzone, best pizza. Yeah. And I thought, that's weird. Why? They're not open for lunch. So, you know, it's 15-minute bike ride. I bike over there and it's just David, Nicola, who works with him, and Dave Gardner and me. And Mark Lucali.
In the whole cooking. Restaurant, you mean?
Just us at a table. And he made Mark cook just for us.
Nice.
And we had some serious...
What did you have?
He made this pork chops with peppers and onions. It was unbelievable, the pork chops. He made pasta fusilli with burrata, fresh tomato sauce. He made, he makes these... His pizzas are legendary.
I have to go there. What's it called?
Lucali? You've never been?
I've never been there.
Oh, no. You guys
you
have
really
to go.
I'm really bad on New York restaurants.
No, no, you have to go.
The scene. Okay. Let's Lucali's? Go next time I come.
Yeah, we have to go. Mm. And there's only like 8 tables. Yeah.
Will they close the restaurant for us?
They won't close the restaurant for us, but they'll give us a table. He'll love you to go into his restaurant. Oh, my God. So this was Friday, and we had 2 bottles of Barolo.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh,
good for him.
Amazing.
Good for David.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it was great.
Well, that's interesting as well, isn't it? About an athlete eating You know, if he was, he's now not playing football anymore.
No, but he works out. Mm. He works out 6 to 7 days a week, like incessantly. So he works out so he can eat because he loves to eat, as you know. Yeah. And I love to eat.
Do you keep wine here?
Do you just go downstairs
and you luckily have a bottle of something?
I'm going to show you because this, okay, so in this house when we moved in, and I'll show you the room, there were barrels because they used to make wine here. So we have grapevines in the back. I can't make the wine now.
Grapevines?
Yeah. Like
Brooklyn wine.
Brooklyn wine, I know, there but they're go. Not, they're not, I don't know how good it is, but yeah. So I don't have that many bottles, but I love it.
So starting about an hour ago, you said to me, I don't know if I have much to say about food.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, but the last thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to shut up about food.
No,
because now I want to talk about food.
Now I know.
Because Tenerife, Spain.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I just got back 4 days ago. I hit all the great restaurants.
Yeah, the great restaurants.
Oh, my God. The greatest restaurants. Yeah. I mean, like funky little hole in the wall tavernas. Yeah. Like, anyway, if you go to Tenerife, I'm going to give you
I was going to go and visit.
The jamon. I mean.
Eibar, my younger brother is obsessed with Tenerife too.
Always think Tenerife is like a tourist.
No, because the Brits all go to the south.
Yeah, that's
But forget the south. You go to the north.
Yeah.
The fish. The fish. The mussels. Oh, man.
That's so good.
And the wine. The local Canary Island wine. And I love Riviera. I don't like. Riviera, I love red Riviera. Oh, I love the wine. But I'm not a Rioja drinker. I'm a Riviera drinker. Anyway, so I just want to make that clear. If anyone wants to send me Spanish
vino. Will get the right one. Okay, well, so if you're, you've got to go have the pasta.
Have the pasta with my son.
Where's he?
Don't get him on food because he eats everything. He's 10 years old. He's got the most, he tries everything. Yeah.
So if we talk about eating for your kids and we talk about making pancakes and we talk about eating, you know, great food with great wine and Tenerife and wherever you are defined as a food person. You may try and run away, but you can't hide.
Okay.
So you are. But if you need food for comfort, is there something you would go to?
The thing that comes into my mind is pasta with pesto. Mm. Pesto, the basil, the cheese, the olive oil, the pine nuts. So I make it. That's the other thing I try to make a little bit, but that gives me comfort.
Okay, well, I hope you don't need comfort because you're a great person.
Oh, too.
Okay, I'm going to see you in London, yeah?
Yes, London.
Thank you for listening to Ruthie's Table 4 in partnership with Montclair.
Ruthie's Table 4 is produced by Atomai Studios for iHeartRadio. It's hosted by Ruthie Rogers and it's produced by Willem Malinsky. This episode was edited by Julia Johnson and mixed by Nigel Appleton. Our executive producers are Faye Stewart and Zad Rogers. Our production manager is Caitlin Paramore and our production coordinator is Bella Cellini. Thank you to everyone at the River Cafe for your help in making this episode.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
how this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.